From 89.7 WUWM Milwaukee's NPR, this is Lake Effect. I'm Audrey Nowakowski.
And I'm Bonnie North. Today on the show, a look at the new documentary, Mr. Soul, which tells the story of Ellis Haslip and his pioneering public television program, Soul.
Then, a look at Milwaukee Magazine's sweet treat ideas for Valentine's Day. Food critic Ann Christensen explains how she made her selections.
It's all stuff that I think is great. Things that I stand behind, I think they're awesome. It's delicious, the texture, the flavor. But I also just want to think about a good mix of things.
And local musician Keith Pulvermacher explains what makes his newest album different than those that came before.
It really has been spurred on by the diagnosis of my dad having cancer and really looking internally at my own life and trying to see what I can do to make a difference in the world with the music and have more purpose.
Lake Effect is next, after this news.
This is Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM Milwaukee's NPR. Thanks so much for joining us today. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Audrey Nowakowski. In the 1960s, there were few black people on television outside of civil rights or Vietnam War images. There were a couple of sitcoms that had black characters, but by and large, TV was created for and reflective of white audiences. Ellis Haslip wanted to change that.
Haslip was the driving force behind the television show Soul. He was the producer, the director, and the host of what is now considered a pioneering program. His life and his work are the subject of a new documentary, Mr. Soul, which is part of Milwaukee Film's celebration of Black History Month. Soul featured prominent artists, poets, and dancers from the black community.
Felipe Luciano was one of those artists. Luciano was one of the founding members of The Last Poets and had a chance to host Soul during its five-year run. Luciano was in Milwaukee for an event with Milwaukee Film, and he spoke with Lake Effect's Joy Powers beforehand by phone from New York City.
Soul was the vision of what I call one of America's first black Renaissance men. His name was Ellis Haslip. He was the director of the show. He was the executive producer of the show. And what he wanted to do was, while we were embroiled in war from 1968 to 1973, what he wanted to do was have us not forget the culture of our beings. He celebrated black life. Now, that may seem, for those of you who have gone, who go back to the 60s, that may seem to be a bit redundant. But the truth was, is that we were so involved on two wars as a country, the war in Vietnam and the war on the streets. And the war, remember, we were also going through assassinations. We were going through the Black Panthers. We were going through the Young Lords. We were going through people reacting differently to oppression and hatred and bitterness. Many of our kids were coming back home in coffins. Others were talking about their depression while being in Vietnam. It was a difficult time for America. So while we were fighting that war, and Nixon was, of course, involved in all of this stuff, Ellis Haslip decided to produce a program that would celebrate black life, not to forget black culture. He saw it as of paramount importance. And when you think about it, it leaves you stunned that even then he knew that the way you combat depression, the way you combat fatigue, the way you combat doubt, the way you combat anxiety is by looking at the positives of yourself. And he did that exquisitely with black culture. The show, of course, was called Soul.
Soul is often described as a pioneering program, which it seems like it's even very unique compared to what we have on the air today. It highlighted poets, it highlighted dance in a way we don't often see. What do you think made it so unique among the programs that were on the air at the time?
The fact that it was courageous. The fact that it was courageous and loving. The fact that it was courageous and inspiring. the fact that he did not divorce culture from politics, from spirit. Today, the shows that we have on that are cultural shows emphasize only one part, one facet of our myriad personality. He wanted us to see every aspect of it. And so what you saw on Soul, what you heard on Soul, were the new talents that were under your nose. You heard about them, the black community heard about it, but you didn't know that they were at world famous. He made them world famous. Before they came to the fore as America's chosen, if you will, these performers were already making names for themselves on the Chitlin circuit, on the Cuchifrito circuit. They were taking care of business. So you heard Patti LaBelle, who everyone loves. You heard James Baldwin. You heard The Last Poets. You heard Nikki Giovanni, Harry Belafonte, Stevie Wonder, Sidney Poitier, Ashford M. Simpson, Rahsaan Roland Kirk, Amiri Baraka, Louis Farrakhan. You name the personality, and they were on the air. Not to mention, he also made sure that we didn't forget that the diaspora is multicultural. He allowed me to do the first Latin show ever recorded nationally. I put on Tito Puente, the king of Latin music, and Willy Colón and Hector Lavoe, both of whom were already, in our minds, the icons of Latino culture. But America didn't know them as a whole. He put them on the air. It was a wonderful triumph of spirit. And each one of those people told the truth. That is, you were not in any way dismissed or censored. And as long as you were not vulgar and offensive, you could, of course, this is all arguable, you could say what you wanted to say, and he would listen with incredible patience and temperance and allow you to say it. It was a wonderful experiment in cinema and, of course, television.
You just mentioned, of course, you got to host Soul, and you introduced Tito Puente, without a doubt one of the most brilliant musicians of the 20th century. What did it mean to you to host that program?
It was the beginning of my television career. No one thought that this music that is forged in Africa, nurtured in Africa. In fact, I contend that Latin music is the most African of all of the musics of the continental United States because it still plays the drum. We still put that drum between our legs. We sing in African dialects. We worship still African gods. We have respect for our ancestors. This kind of thing had not been done before. And so to be able to not only produce these gentlemen, who I thought were the epitome of Puerto Rican culture, but also to be able to read the poem, I wrote a poem called Driving Latin Rhythms, before the show starts, accompanied by Tito Puente and the band, was for me transformative. It really broke the mold. It told Puerto Ricans, it told Cubans, it told Dominicans, it told Mexicans and all of the other Latinos, we are here, and you are being recognized.
You first appeared on the program with The Last Poets, you know, as a poet and as a part of a group of poets that had some really big things to say. Did you imagine yourself ending up on television in front of a national audience?
Of course we did. We knew that at some point someone would listen. The dream was that we would be able to educate, to illuminate, to inspire, and empower people of color. What's amazing is that we were doing this in an inclusive manner. Please understand that this is the first time that we had a solid coalition, a solid black and Latino coalition. We hadn't seen that before. The Last Poets were the first group to bring together a Latino and three African Americans. It was miraculous when you think about it. Look at the way we were thinking. Ellis did the same thing by bringing Tito Puente on the show. And Willie Colon and Hector Lavoe, who became the Meister singer of the 70s. That is, his position was that Africa is the epitome of American culture. I think African culture, that is African culture as we know it here in the, has already supplanted all forms of culture in this country. Jazz is the original art form, but fashion, style, swag, all of that now you see on television. The advertisements reek of it. What we don't have is political power. What we don't have is the financial freedom to take our dreams and mold them. But we certainly have become the barometer for culture in the world. I'm very proud of that, and I think we're going to go beyond that. Ellis knew that. You know, Ellis knew that we were pretty, intelligent, incredibly spiritual also. He did not run away from spirituality. Many of the shows will not broach the subject of God. He did. Many of the shows will not broach, in those days, talk about the LGBT community was taboo. Ellis was a proud gay man, and he didn't care who knew it. And when he sat down with Minister Farrakhan, it was the watershed. It was the high point of that kind of a discussion. And believe it or not, they both respected each other and discussed their pros and cons with tremendous love for each other. It was an incredible show. He sat down with Amiri Baraka. And Amiri at that time was moving towards socialism and communism and talked about those concepts and talked about Kawaida and Ron Karenga and all of the others. Out of that vortex came Kwanzaa, by the way, the celebration of Kwanzaa. Ellis was interested in all aspects, the whole dynamic of black life and culture. And he proved that by producing it on television.
This documentary, Mr. Soul, really is as much about the television show as it is about Ellis himself. You had a quote in the documentary about Ellis. You said he was the most effective, insidious revolutionary, which I thought it's such an interesting thing to say about a man who you seem to love so much. What did you mean by that?
There are two, unfortunately, we as a people minimize our protest. We minimize our dissent. We suppress it by saying it only has to be this way. It can only be political. It cannot be, your dissent cannot have any other dynamic. Ellis believed that dissent had a plethora of forms. It could be cultural, it could be poetic, it could be intellectual, it could be spiritual. So what I meant by that is that his revolution was to worm his way inside your heart and to expose the cult of inferiority that too many of us were operating under, to show us the beauty of ourselves, to take the mirror and say, look at what you have created, black people. Why are you going around hanging your head? Nobody knows the trouble I've seen. Yes, we do. And we've created an incredible art form of it. This is what we're about. And you have to give thanks to his niece, Melissa Hazlip, who for 10 years had this dream and put it together and did it in such a way that you get an exciting feeling about what the possibilities are. She was, and Sam Pollard, who helped her direct it. It's just an incredible, incredible array of talent spread across. Just think about it. Think about Donny Hathaway. Think about Rahsaan Roland Kirk. Think about Black Ivory. Think about Sonia Sanchez and Ashton Simpson. We talked about Stevie Wonder already. Ossie Davis and Ruby Dee. We already spoke about Patty. Did we say Donny Hathaway? Yes. Mm-hmm. I mean, think of the talent that we had. That talent is not around anymore, many of them. But we had it and we exploited it, meaning we showed it. I think it was transformative in terms of molding the consciousness of the new black intelligentsia, the new black movement.
It really was amazing to see just how many influential people were on that program and the kinds of discussions that happened there, which you don't often see on television anymore, which is often, you know, just kind of sound bites. What do you think, when you look back, what do you think is Ellis Hazlip's lasting legacy?
His love of inclusion, his tolerance for controversy, his courage in standing up for a morality and an ethic that we do have, his being able to say, why do you want to assimilate to the extent that you destroy your own sense of wealth? Why not look at this? And by the way, many white people were affected by it as well. His sense of inclusion, his sense of, I see Soul as Ellis with elastic arms, just surrounding everyone, the entire family of blackness in this country, and saying, we love you, we celebrate you, we want you to be successful by being who you are. That is his lasting legacy.
Felipe Luciano is a poet, activist, and one of the subjects featured in the documentary Mr. Soul, which is part of Milwaukee Film's Black History Month celebration. He spoke with Lake Effect's Joy Powers, and there is more information at WUWM.com.
Coming up next, a look at Milwaukee Magazine's list of local sweets to try this Valentine's Day. This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. We're back with more of Lake Effect. I'm Audrey Nowakowski.
And I'm Bonnie North. Valentine's Day is just a couple of days away, and for many that means one thing and one thing only: candy. The annual Love Fest has become a celebration of all things sweet, whether it's a piece of chocolate cake at the end of a romantic night or the anticipation of half-price candy the following day.
For its February issue, Milwaukee Magazine has created a list of local treats to enjoy this Valentine's Day, or any day for that matter. Ann Christensen is the dining critic for Milwaukee Magazine, and she joins Lake Effect's Joy Powers to talk about how she made her selections.
Every dining critic has their own subjective tastes for sweets, for anything. But at the same time, I'm always looking for or thinking about the other kind of diner, someone who doesn't have the same taste as I do. You know, for instance, when I say I love chocolate, not everybody loves chocolate, even though Valentine's Day is synonymous with chocolates. So when I was putting together this roundup of really great treats to give to your, you know, significant other or to buy for yourself, I always have to think about the mix, you know? And it's all stuff that I think is great. Things that I stand behind, I think they're awesome. It's delicious, the texture, the flavor, it's satisfying. But I also just want to think about a good mix of things. If you don't necessarily like lemon, or you don't like, fruit desserts, or you don't like chocolate, you find something here, though, that you do like.
And you do have a good mix of different foods. You have, some kind of old standards, things that are kind of comforting sweet foods. And then you have some things that, at least for me, are a little bit, you know, more unusual. One of the things that really stuck out to me in the layout was this, you're calling it pear perfection, but it's the little pear surrounded by pastry.
It's a frangipane, sort of a almond tart. So it's sort of a custardy cake that has kind of a light syrupy topping, and it has a sort of a fresh pear in the center of it. But it's from one of my favorite bakeries in town, which is called Amaranth. And it's right around, I want to say, like 33rd and Lisbon. And it is just, it's almost the perfect size for you to share with somebody, too. And I also just think it's somewhat unique. I don't know anybody else who does a pastry like this. And, you know, why not, you know, buy something like that that's really special for Valentine's Day, for yourself, again, or for someone that you love. And, you know, not your average, like, run-of-the-mill, sweet, something different. Plus, it gets you, if you haven't been to Amaranth, it gets you out there and to try it and maybe try some other things there. That's always my other, like, method of, you know, the thing that I'm thinking about at the same time. It's like, oh, how can I get people to try this place and kind of go a little bit, a step farther, maybe find something else there that they find interesting.
I was about to say, when I looked at the pear tart, I was like, huh, I wonder what that's from. Like, does Amaranth have a particular kind of pastry that they do, or do they do just a wide array of things?
They do a lot of different things. They do a lot of really great cookies. They do breads, sweet breads. They do pastries. They have something called a Queen Amand, which is, it's a French pastry that is like pure butter. It's just flaky. It's, to me, if you like croissant, you know, it's not like that, but it goes like the sweet, buttery, five steps further than that. So they do a lot of different things, and there's a little bit, I guess a little bit of a French edge to what they do. And then they do like little rougelach, which is a Jewish pastry. Again, they have all these different, really different things that I think are really fun. So yeah, they have a great mix of things. I just happen to really love this tart. It's also somewhat, when you think of like pear desserts, that they're kind, that's kind of a wintry thing too. And we're still in winter, so.
Yeah, we're
definitely still in winter.
Well, on the idea of French pastries, I'm assuming that Le Rêve Pâtisserie, their Le Rêve Pâtisserie, I should say that in
American. Wow, you have a great accent.
I speak poor French.
Okay, well, you were trying. That was pretty good.
Thank you.
Better than me.
They have a citron tart.
Yes.
That is also highlighted here. I love these kinds of pastries where they have, you know, the impossibly beautiful fruit on top and that lovely meringue.
Yeah. I am a sucker for lemon. So I had to put lemon in here because I love a lemon custard tart. If you like lemon meringue pie, you kind of know what I'm talking about. But this has sort of like a, it has a pastry on the bottom, and then it has that custardy, almost like a lemon curd type of filling. And then they do that meringue on top that's toasted. And it's just such a wonderful balance of a little bit of crispiness, that texture of the custard, and then the fluffiness of the meringue on top, which is a little bit toasted at the same time. To me, that's like that's just a perfect fruit dessert.
It sounds delicious, and it looks beautiful.
Yeah, it looks beautiful, and if you were to go into Le Rêve, you would just look at the case and be mesmerized by all the different pastries they do there, because this is just one of, like, dozens of things that they do that are all just exquisitely beautiful and wonderful. The flavor and the texture are just really wonderful.
Which sounds, you know, quintessentially French, right?
Yes, yes. And that's another great place. And again, this photo is beautiful. You see the fresh fruit on top of the meringue. What's not to love about that? It almost looks like spring when you look at it. But if you go in there, they have these other incredible desserts, and you might be kind of pulled in that direction or to get something in addition to this, you know? So, yeah.
So a couple of really standard kind of comfort sweets, I would call them.
Mm-hmm.
There's a chocolate bar from Indulgence Chocolate. What makes them unique? You know, I hear about them all the time, and I haven't actually had Indulgence Chocolate.
They do a lot of bars that have various or different flavors in them. You know, they've got a chocolate bar that actually has curry in it. They have, like, malted flavors. There's a tea flavor, different reishi teas. So they do a lot of, like, infusing, you know, chocolates that are infused with different flavors. What I like about this particular bar is, if you like a bittersweet chocolate bar that's just not too bitter, I have to say I do love really bitter chocolate. This one is not as bitter as they come. This is only 54%. But it gives you enough of that bitterness, not too sweet like a milk chocolate. It's also vegan. So it doesn't have any dairy in it, too. But it's really creamy. So it's a really satisfying kind of, if you're thinking of chocolate as kind of healthy, you know, there's a lot of these health benefits to dark chocolate. It's kind of perfect.
And this is called dark chocolate and sea salt. Is that?
Yes, which is, I was about to mention, that's another, to me, a little bit of sea salt on dark chocolate is wonderful. It just adds a little bit of balance to that sweetness. And, you know, I start thinking about, when did someone decide to start putting a little bit of salt on chocolate? Because that was brilliant. I love a little bit of salt on chocolate chip cookies, too.
I was about to say, my mom used to do that. Or she would use salted butter.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
just to bring that, that concept up
a little,
yeah.
Well, and on the idea of cookies, you also highlight what have to be huge cookies. I mean, they're completely filling this plate, ironically from a place called Small Pie.
Yeah, that actually I hadn't even thought about that. But they're giant. And if you are a true chocoholic, you need to try this chocolate cookie. I've tried a lot of chocolate cookies, you know, and been like, oh, yeah, the flourless ones, those are okay. You know, ones that are just chocolate chip. This one is over-the-top chocolate. It is just decadent. But it is not a cookie that I myself have ever been able to finish in. I mean, like, you are going to be breaking off pieces of this for a couple days, I think, or sharing it with someone. But it is just the perfect, if you love chocolate and there's not such a thing as too much chocolate for you, this cookie is it. And yes, it's available at Small Pie. I've also, Small Pie is actually a little kind of an outpost subsidiary of Honey Pie Bakery, which is in Bayview. They're both in Bayview. And Honey Pie does a lot of wholesale baked goods as well. So if you know the Cafe Alderin,
yeah,
which is on Water Street, kind of near Pleasant, they often will have these chocolate cookies as well.
So if you're looking for a big cookie.
A big cookie. A really big chocolate cookie. This is it.
Of course, this whole list highlights local places.
Yeah.
But one place that is not just local, but is an old local, a Wisconsin, standard, is Burke Candies.
Yeah. If you have not discovered Burke, that's another really interesting little, I mean, when I say another, there's a few really interesting little candy makers in town that have been around a long time. There's everything from Freezes in West Dallas, Kara's Candy Kitchen, which is in the Public Market, and then there's Burke, which is in River West. In a really, you wouldn't, it's kind of a little, it's sort of the north end of River West, close to Humboldt, and there's a bunch of little businesses in this little area, and you don't really know that it's there unless you're going out of your way to find it. And that's where they make their chocolates, and that's where they have their little shop as well, and they just have wonderful English toffee there. It is one of their staple candies that they do, and if you like toffee, and I know it's not everybody loves toffee. They're like, oh, it gets stuck in my teeth. I don't really like that. But I have to say, when I was growing up and my grandmother would get those Whitman samplers, sometimes you didn't know what was what. But as kids, we knew the shape of the toffees. We knew the chocolate-covered toffee. Everybody went for those first. And so that's always been kind of one of my, like a Heath bar, always been one of my favorites. And there's different ways that you can get toffee there with nuts covered in chocolate. It's so buttery, and it really, their toffee doesn't really get stuck in your teeth. It's really, it's lighter. It isn't so, like, shard. Like, it's not so hard that it gets stuck in your teeth and you're like, trying to get that out. It's perfect if you love toffee.
I'm a huge toffee
And you
toffee
should love
fan.
Toffee,
yeah.
In my opinion. So.
But I get the sharp thing. But when you find a really good buttery toffee, I mean, that's a place to keep in mind.
Yes, absolutely.
So the last thing that we haven't talked about is this lavender cake. Is it called Lavender Dream, or is that?
No, that was just a little tagline I gave it. I think it's just a lavender white cake. And the interesting thing about it, you see so many cakes in town that are, again, chocolate. Chocolate is so popular. Or red velvet, you see cakes like that. But you don't see a lot of white cakes. That's kind of unusual. And you certainly don't see many that have lavender as the predominant flavor in it.
Lavender's hard.
It
any
is.
Of those floral flavors, they can very quickly become kind of perfumey, kind of soapy. What helps
overwhelming.
The lavender in this?
It's just subtle. It's subtle, but it's there. And I think partly because the cake itself is a vanilla white cake, it's not competing with anything else. So that's really the only other flavor that you've got in there. Plus, the cake itself, it's just so kind of beautifully tender. Obviously, when you have a cake, you don't want a dry cake. But this just has a perfect texture. The buttercream is kind of perfect. I mean, there's not too much of it. There's not too little of it. It's a multi-layer cake, so you're getting some more buttercream in the center of the cake and then on the top and on the sides. Just perfect balance if you don't like too sweet, but you want something that's sweet. And again, the lavender kind of is infused through it without having that overly floral flavor to it. You're right, though. Lavender is really tricky.
Lavender, rose.
Yeah, you know. Right. And this one is made by the Cake Lady, which is a Bayview bakery. You can find this cake at the Anodyne location, at various Anodyne locations, but for sure the one at Milwaukee Public Market. And if you're, you know, going in the afternoon, you want to give yourself a little bit of a treat. It's just a beautiful, the way they slice, it's a really beautiful cake, too.
You can see all the layers. It's lovely in the layout.
Yeah. Here. Yeah, it absolutely is. Yeah.
So speaking of the layout, you know, we have six different options here, but I know in radio we always call it, you know, we call it a terrible thing, killing your puppies or killing, you know, when you have to remove the things that you really wanted to keep in.
Oh, because it didn't fit. Yeah,
because it didn't fit in the layout or it didn't, in our case, yeah, fit for time. Was there anything that was a really close contender that you went, oh, I wish that, I could have gotten it in?
Yeah, there actually was. And that is absolutely describes my world, too.
Yeah.
I had actually a couple of things. One of them was the cheesecake from Sima's,
okay,
which is a bakery out in Wauwatosa, or Sima's. I think
I always mispronounce it.
You know, I'm of two minds about cheesecake. My very favorite cheesecake is like a New York-style cheesecake, which is very hard to get here. It's very dense. I don't feel like I need a lot of, you know, toppings on it. But I really like Sima's version of cheesecake, which is very light, and it often has like a raspberry filling. Sometimes it's combined with a layer of cake, like a yellow cake, and then it has like a chocolate ganache on it. So it really is like more than cheesecake oftentimes, but it's really wonderful. And the nice thing about it when you go to the bakery is you can actually get kind of little versions of it. So you don't have to buy an entire cheesecake. But that was one of the ones that I wanted to have in here because I kind of felt like cheesecake was, I don't know, I felt like I wanted cheesecake in here. But it didn't fit. So, you know, what can you do?
It happens.
Next time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Anne, thank you so much for joining us here on Lake Effect and telling us all about the great sweet things in Milwaukee.
Yeah, absolutely. No, happy Valentine's Day.
You as well.
Thanks.
Anne Christensen is the dining critic for Milwaukee Magazine. She spoke with Joy Powers. You can find Christensen's article on sweet treats for this Valentine's Day in the February issue of the magazine.
We'll take one last break and then have an in-studio chat with Wisconsin musician Keith Pulvermacher, who recently released a new album. This is Lake Effect from WUWM.
Lake Effect continues now on 89.7 WUWM Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Audrey Nowakowski. At the end of 2018, singer-songwriter and Oconomowoc native Keith Pulvermacher released his latest album. 45 Story was recorded in Nashville and features a variety of musicians, including mandolin virtuoso Sam Bush.
About a week after the album's release, Pulvermacher stopped by our studio, solo, for a chat about the new record and to share a couple of the tunes, including this one called Come On Back.
Before you learn, when you crash, it's gonna burn. But there's a place where you can turn back in these loving arms, back in these loving arms. Sometimes you gotta die a little. Let the train fall off the tracks. Hit the bottom of the bottle. Just make sure you come on back. When you fall and you face first in the dirt, might have to crawl to get through the hurt. Might take some time, but you will find your way back home. No, you're not alone. Sometimes you gotta die a little. Let the train fall off the tracks. Hit the bottom of the bottle. Just make sure you come on back. There's a reason. It's pain by design, so we can feel it. And we know where to draw the line. Sometimes you gotta die a little. Let the train fall off the tracks. Hit the bottom of the bottle. Just make sure you come on back. It's okay to lose your way. Just make sure you come on back. Hey! Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Come on back, Keith Pulvermacher in Lake Effect's Performance Studio. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
What a great tune. And I was sitting there listening to it thinking, that is so true, and it's so hard to do.
Yeah.
To let yourself go off the tracks,
right.
Or to give yourself permission to do that, or to forgive yourself for doing
forgiving
that.
Forgiving yourself, I think, is pretty tough.
Most of the songs on this album, the new album, 45 Story, they feel really, really personal, like this one. Where did they come from? What was the impetus for this?
I'm always writing, so... This time around with this record, it really has been spurred on by the diagnosis of my dad having cancer and really looking internally at my own life and trying to see what I can do to make a difference in the world with the music and have more purpose. And really just so that people don't feel alone when they need help or aren't too proud to reach out for it or, you know, admit that they need it. I definitely do, you know. So, I mean, for me, it's been a just kind of cathartic way to try to achieve that through the music and make it mean more than just some self-absorbed songs, you know.
You know, about young love or whatever, which is great.
Right.
I mean, and the thing is, music plays that role in so many of our lives anyway, even if the songs aren't specifically about that. It's like we connect.
Well, it can, you know. I mean, there's room for everything, I think. You know, the fun songs are great, too. I mean, I'm not taking anything away from those or, you know, for me personally this time around, it just wasn't necessarily about, you know, writing fun music, you know. I might on the next one, you know, I might do something completely different. I don't know. I don't really dictate where it goes. Sometimes it just happens, and then I just pay attention to it, and then I write it when I feel something from it. That's typically what I do.
How long did it take to put this collection of songs together?
You know, there's a couple songs that I brought back that I wrote maybe 10 years ago. There's a song called What It Is to Live. There's some songs I wish were on the record that I haven't recorded yet. Well, I have recorded, but just didn't make it on the record. I mean, typically we record a couple more songs and then take them off, but I was traveling back and forth to Nashville, so I had to be kind of a little bit more efficient.
Okay, yeah. So I was going to ask you where the recording happened. So you're doing most of the recording in Nashville now or just for this album?
Yes, I did most of the recording in Nashville. I almost missed the plane. The whole project has been so close to catastrophe, like from the CD release party to the first session we had was here in Milwaukee. And it was the day after Christmas last year, and I got a phone call from my tenant who's in my duplex, and she was like, well, I think the pipes are leaking because I can hear it spraying in the walls. And I'm like, oh, they're not leaking. So I had probably 10 people in the studio, you know, people in from out of town, and my producer was up from Nashville because he's from here originally. He was visiting family. We thought we'd kill two birds with one stone. And so I had to can the session, and then I had to be on the plane. I had another session booked in Nashville, and the plane was boarding at 6:15, and I woke up at 5:19 in Oconomowoc, and I was like, I started shaking, and I drove down there in like 95 miles an hour, blew past a cop. He didn't pull me over. I was like, well, maybe that's a sign. I mean, it was like 20 below zero, and I got three guitars, a suitcase, and my backpack, and I'm like walking, dragging all this stuff through the parking structure to the gate, and like the woman's like, "You're gonna miss your plane." I'm like, "I can't miss the plane. It's gonna be a $10,000 mistake if I miss a plane." So I walk on the plane with my shoes, and I'm shaking, and my hands are all crippled up from being dehydrated, and I can't breathe, and I'm like, I mean, it had to be. I wish somebody had it on video, because it just had to be something to be seen. It was chaotic.
But you made it.
I did, with 3 minutes left, and my keyboard player is sitting there with a Bloody Mary. He's like, "You good?"
I will be if I have a Bloody Mary. Yeah. And I assume all the guitars made it and everything made
it. Everything made it. And I just got some new guitar cases, too, so they didn't have my name on there. And I've got the longest name in the world, and I'm from Oconomowoc, Wisconsin. And I'm, like, trying to write it out, and everything looks like I'm written by Santa because I'm shaking so bad.
So it only could go uphill from it was, there. It was, well, or actually, down, it was, downhill, maybe. It was, yeah.
I wrote a song called "I Know I'm Gonna Make It" because it's all downhill from here. But that's besides the point. It's not on the record either. But no, when I got – it was actually – by the time Downbeat happened, because we had everything booked on Music Row, had the engineer there, had I had to hire a drummer because my drummer was all busted up at the time. And so Dan Needham was down there playing drums. And so I had the engineer and video people down there. So if I would have missed – because that was the day we were tracking all the bed tracks. And if I didn't get those bed tracks, the rest of the week I was down there to do all the overdubs and all the repairs and all the guitar work and all the – you know, pull all the scratch tracks out. And for people who don't know what I'm talking about, you lay down the drums and the bass first and the keys first. And you want to get really, really good bed tracks. So that's the foundation of the songs, you know. And then you go in and you do everything else, the vocals and the guitars and any other, you know – colorful instruments that you're going to add on top of that. But if those bed tracks aren't laid, you're you know,
you got nothing.
Nothing to build on.
Right.
You know, so that would have been that would have cost me $10,000. So, yeah, that 3 minutes was really, really valuable to me. It's super valuable for sure.
Oh well, I we're going to go back to this album, but I am looking forward to the next album when you write about all of that.
It's going to be a punk record.
There's got to be. There's got to be something in there where you're just thrashing.
Yeah, I do. You know? I do. I definitely got a little of that in me, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can throw it off the rails a couple times.
Well, before we get into more about the album, let's hear another tune from it.
Okay.
What are you going to play for us?
I'm going to play The Fog. When the fog comes rolling in, can't see where I've been and where I'm going. I've been keeping my head down, looking at the ground below my feet. When the dreams all disappear, like the past, it isn't clear, no way of knowing which direction I should take. Faith is all that's left here to guide me. Well, I've learned a thing or two, but now my vision isn't what it used to be. And I'll get lost again every now and then. When the fog comes rolling in, some faces seem familiar, but time has changed the places I have known. I know everyone is in the dark sometimes, so when I feel alone, try to scream a little louder, so maybe someone out there hears my voice. And I'll get lost again every now and then. When the fog comes rolling in. When
I can't see my way. I listen and I pray. So maybe I'll feel signs in the dark, and I'll find my way again. Every now and then, when the fog comes rolling in, when the fog comes rolling in, when the fog comes rolling in.
Keith Pulvermacher in Lake Effects Performance Studio with The Fog from his brand new album, 45 Story. Keith, thank you.
Thank you.
You talked about one of the things you wanted to do with this is give back and to let people know that they weren't alone. And there's another aspect, though, to the album that you kind of took it another step by giving songs away. So explain to me what that is and how that's working.
I say a lot of stuff on Facebook or, you know, I'm pretty passionate about what I feel, and I don't want to make it political. Being a decent human being has become political. I mean, it's just ridiculous to me. So I say things, and then people think I'm divisive if I don't stand on their side of the fence. To me, it's kind of like walking the walk and talking the talk. And the philanthropic end of it is I feel I've been given a gift, and I feel like people who have these blessings, whether it's financial gain or smart or talented, we have a responsibility to take care of each other. And now some people do it and some people don't, but what I want to do is I want to lead by example. I wrote this song called Always Be Here For You. And then I was like, you know, I think I can do more with this record. And I think I can make a difference and bring awareness to certain things that people aren't paying. Not that they're not paying attention to charities, but if I give the song away, maybe I can get, and I give it, like I give 100% of the download for this one song. Maybe I could get a corporate sponsor to come in and sponsor that particular charity for $5,000 or whatever. I just came up with an arbitrary number that I was like, it's not too much, but it's not too little, you know? It's a good number. And then all the people who are working with the charity are giving their time and their passion. So everybody's kind of coming together just through one song, you know? And so that was the idea, and I was just gonna do it once, but then I was like, why don't I do this like 12 times, you know? Why don't I, and if it keeps going, why don't I do it again? And why don't I find other people who wanna do it? And I'm going to build it. I mean, this is something I'm definitely building, and I'm pretty excited about the potential of what I'm doing. So the campaign is called the Always Be Here For You campaign. And the MAC Fund is the January recipient. And so I get, Super Excavators gave $5,000 to the MAC Fund. And so whatever money comes in on the download, if you go to givesong.org, that's going to be the hub for all of the philanthropic stuff. The response has been really, really cool, and it's been really heartwarming to see people go, yeah, man, I'm in. They want to help. You know, people do want to help, and you just got to give them a way to do it, you know? I do think there's more good in the world than bad. I do have faith in that. I just think that the bad is just getting all the press.
Well, Keith, it has been such a pleasure to have you in the studio. Best of luck.
Thank
I
you.
Hope you'll come back and tell us how it goes. 6 months to a year, let us know.
Yeah, I mean,
who's on board? Maybe bring some musicians in.
That'd be great. I mean, my band is killer. I got some friends who came in from Nashville to play with me tonight, and so I'm going to do that some more. And I'd like to get out on the road a little bit and touring. I just signed with a manager in New York a couple weeks ago, and so
congratulations.
Thank
on
you.
That.
Thank yep. Yeah. I've known her for a long time, and so it's just another, you know, you can only talk for yourself so much, and people don't listen, you know. And then you You're like, no, I do. I just needed to start pulling on some all these this network of people that I've had for years and years and years, and I just didn't ever tap into it. You know, I was just like, well, I'll just keep doing what I'm doing. But now it's definitely need to go to the next place. And now's the time. I mean, you know, 45 story is like, what am I going to do with my time while I got this? You know, what if I, you know, I could get sick. I could, something could happen. And then did I capitalize on my opportunity, or did I let it go away because I was afraid of failure? You know, it's stupid.
Getting back to that, don't be afraid to let it go off the tracks a little bit.
Yeah, I won't.
Yeah,
I'll probably drive it into the tunnel.
Exactly.
I'll drive it in the mountain.
Like, oh no. Tracks? What tracks? I needed tracks for this?
I just don't have anything left because I'm on fire now.
Well, bring the band next time.
Awesome.
Love to hear the full thing. And I'm hoping you'll take us out with the song that is the catalyst for this new way of thinking about how to help people.
Yeah, that's great. I'd be happy to. And thank you again for having me on the show. We might lose touch now and then, but I will never let you down. You have my heart and soul, my friend. Even when I'm not around, when you feel like you're alone and you need someone to get you through. If you need someone to call, someone to catch you if you fall, if you need somewhere to go where you can be yourself, you know. There are times when I feel helpless, times when I need someone to.
Keith Pulvermacher recorded in the Lake Effect Performance Studio back in January. He had just released his newest album, 45 Story.
You can find out more about Keith's fundraising campaign featuring this song, Always Be Here For You, to benefit the Mac Fund at WUWM.com. Our in-studio performance was engineered by Jason Reavy. And that is all the time we have today. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Audrey Nowakowski. Thanks so much for tuning in today, and I hope you can be with us again tomorrow at 10 for another Lake Effect here on listener-supported 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR.
Stay tuned. Fresh air comes your way next. It's 11 o'clock.
Light when it gets dark, I will put you back together. If you need to fall apart, I will be the anchor. There's nothing left to hold on to.